Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's April 20th, 2020, live to be rebroadcast April 22nd, 2020. I'm Fran Storch, MD, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate right in the conversation about natural medicine while live, you can comment below on Facebook Live, and you can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. The Facebook Live is posted on my Facebook page, and you can continue to comment there, and you can send me messages. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. More stuff on coronavirus that, you know, I just want to review the five. Don't forget to wash your hands often whenever you're changing activities, whenever you come in from a new space. If you're going to cough or sneeze, cough into your elbow. Try not to touch your face. Maintain physical distance. Do socialize with people, but stay at least 6 feet away from them unless they're on your quarantine. And otherwise, if you're feeling sick, stay home. And don't forget to take your cytokine calmers. Don't forget to drink your ginger tea, eat curcumin and turmeric and things with resveratrol in them. You can take resveratrol in pills or you can eat resveratrol in grapes. Then, and don't forget about ginger. Don't forget about nettles and licorice. All good things to help to keep the cytokine storm down. Okay, what's today, Ron?
Hey, it's 420.
Yay, it's 420.
I mean, so, April 20th.
It's April 20th. It's April 20th, 2020.
Actually, it's April 20th, 2020, and the entire month is
420. What's one of the things that's really sad about the whole pandemic, unfortunately, is that we're so focused on the coronavirus that we can't that we haven't been able to celebrate the fact that it's 420. How do I make this bigger? I can't see it.
How do you
make
which bigger?
This box.
That box?
Oh, yeah.
Hold on 1 second. I can do that
so
while you're doing that.
It's really, it's really kind of a sad thing that we can't really be thinking about it because all we're thinking about is that every day it's coronavirus. The coronavirus has just absolutely taken over the news feed, which is understandable because it is really what we're going through. But today is April 20th, so I wanted to do some celebrating of cannabis, the plant cannabis, and how it is a helpful plant to us, and talk about perhaps how it might help during the pandemic, because some people are definitely using it during the pandemic. Okay, so both marijuana smokers and non-smokers and people who use cannabis any which way recognize April 20th or 420 as a national holiday for cannabis culture, but not everybody knows how the date actually got chosen. It is the code among police officers for cannabis smoking in progress. And some note that, did you know that April 20th is Adolf Hitler's birthday?
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Oh,
and also in Bob Dylan's song, Rainy Day Women, 12 and 35, he talks about number 12 and 35 because 12 multiplied by 35 equals 420. So there are some rumors about the history, the most credible story. So it looks like the story of how it got to be 420 isn't 100% certain, but the most likely story is this, and that it goes back to Marin County, California. In 1971, there were five students at San Rafael High School, and San Rafael is where the Grateful Dead have previously and perhaps still are based. So at San Rafael High School, they'd meet at 4:20 p.m. by the campus's statue of the chemist Louis Pasteur to partake. They chose that specific time because of extracurricular activities usually ended by that time. So, you know, if you were on a sports team or if you're in choir or something like that, then at 4:20 you could gather around the statue of Louis Pasteur. So there was a group of a bunch of them: Steve Capper, Dave Reddix, Jeffrey Noel, and Larry Schwartz and Mark Gravich. There's five of them. They were known as the Waldos because they met at a wall, and they would say 420 to each other as a code for cannabis.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. As really Reddix told Time magazine in 2017, they got tired of the Friday night football scene with all the jocks. They were the guy sitting under the stand smoking a doob, wondering what we were doing there. They hung out long after 4:20 p.m. They challenged each other to find more interesting things to do under the influence, and they called the activities safaris. Later, Reddix's brother helped him get work with the Grateful Dead bassist Phil Lesh as a roadie. So the band is said to have helped popularize the term 420. And on December 28, 1990, a group of deadheads in Oakland gave out flyers that invited people to smoke 420 on April 20th at 4:20 p.m. So one ended up with a reporter for High Times, Steve Bloom, who was an authority on cannabis culture. So High Times printed the flyer and continued to reference the number, and it became known as the code for marijuana. So in 1998, the outlet acknowledged the Waldos were the inventors of 420. And now Bloom is now the publisher of celebstoner.com, who credited the people who wrote the flyer for the date's reputation as an annual gathering of pot smokers. They wanted people over the world to get together one day a year and collectively smoke pot at the same time. And they birthed the idea of a stoner holiday, which it's become. So happy 420, everyone. Yay. Hooray. So they call themselves the Waldos, and I wonder if the cartoon Where's Waldo? I don't know this for a fact, but I wonder if the cartoon Where's Waldo is a reference to that. I do not know. But happy 420, everybody. If you are not interested in cannabis, or cannabis doesn't work for you, or CBD doesn't work for you, or it's not something you want to partake of, that's totally fine. I am fine with the use of cannabis. There are people who are using cannabis at this time during the time of the pandemic to help themselves with their healing and to stay sane. So if that's you, shout out to you if that's what you're doing. I do have a belief that cannabis should not be illegal. If you can make opioids, alcohol, and tobacco legal, cannabis should certainly be legal. And of course, not only is alcohol legal, but during the time of the pandemic, liquor stores are considered to be essential. Part of why they're considered to be essential is because we don't want people going cold turkey off alcohol right now, because you get withdrawal syndrome and you might have to access the healthcare system. And you don't want to do that. You want to stay out of the healthcare system as best as you can at this time. So you want to stay healthy. And if you are in a place where you're using a lot of alcohol, or using an equilibrated level of alcohol, you're using about the same amount of alcohol every day, and you're somewhat dependent on it, this is not a good time to let go of that. And if you want to gradually back off and you are okay when you're doing that, that's one thing. But if you're doing 4 glasses of alcohol of some kind a day and you want to suddenly quit, that's not a good idea at this time. I would say if you want to back off your alcohol, do exactly that, back off it, that where you do a little bit less every single day, like maybe half a glass less than whatever you're doing if you want to actually quit, because you don't want to burden the healthcare system and you don't want to go into the healthcare system. It's one less place that you need to go and potentially be contaminated. So let's talk about CBD. So CBD is cannabidiol. Cannabidiol is an extract of cannabis that doesn't have the psychedelic features. It doesn't have the psychoactive features. Well, it's psychoactive, it's just not psychedelic. In fact, the psychoactive, psychedelic abilities of THC, the ability of THC to make you so-called high, is moderated by CBD. So you can raise, if you need some of the activity of CBD, so for example, if you have inflammation or pain, or you need the THC to increase your appetite, for example, if you're on cancer chemotherapy, and yet you don't want to feel particularly high, your medicinary can go ahead and adjust the CBD and THC levels of various products that you might have, whether you're using smoke or whether you're using an oil or whether you're using edibles. You can get different levels of THC and CBD in each of your products. There have been studies about CBD and inflammation. And so the coronavirus activates interleukin 6. So when we talk about the cytokine storm, all of the inflammatory compounds that come in the cytokine storm, there are different things called interleukins and bradykinins and interferon. And these are all things that are activated when your body sees an invader. And if they are excessively activated, then you get excessive activation of your white blood cells, you get the infiltrates in your lungs, and you get one of the severe effects of the coronavirus. Well, to moderate that effect, if you have CBD on board, CBD calms a specific interleukin, which is one of the cytokines, interleukin 6. So it may be helpful in that way. If you're having anxiety during the time of the coronavirus, and who isn't, then CBD can be helpful. In my observation. It's not necessarily helpful for everyone, but it is helpful for some people. So if you're using CBD in that way, again, when you use CBD, you have to moderate your dose. Some people do very well with a small 5 milligram dose. Other people can need as much as 50 milligrams at a time. And a lot of people need somewhere in between. My opinion is if you can get a sublingual oil, that's a great way to go because you're putting the oil under your tongue and you're getting quick absorption that way, and that you'll absorb it faster than if you were to eat it. Although if you're very sensitive, if you eat it, you'll still get some benefit from it. So certainly anxiety, helping to bring you back into the moment, helping you to feel more at peace. And the thing is that there's two sides to this. You know, when we talk about the pandemic, on the one hand, you might have anxiety about, obviously, there are people who are very, very affected by this, people who are on the front lines, caring for people who actually are gravely affected with the coronavirus. You have people who are putting themselves in danger every day because they are essential workers who face the public without necessarily having adequate ways to protect themselves. And they put themselves at risk for getting the virus. And so it's hard not to have compassion for those people. And obviously, if you do, you're human. And so it's kind of like it's a stressor that's out there or part of your life that you can't let go of. I don't think it's reasonable to expect that we're going to be able to not have feelings about what's going on with the coronavirus at this time. We're all human. We all have we all have feelings about it. We all, you know, if you have any kind of compassion in your life, then, you know, what's going on in the world is going to be affecting you right now. So in terms of, whatever you're feeling right now, if you're feeling like you're in a balanced place or if you're feeling like you're in a good place, I feel like it's always out there. It's always out there that there's something going on and there's something going on with the pandemic that's going to be affecting you, and it's going to be affecting you emotionally. And if that's how you feel, that you just, like, try as you might, you can't entirely let it go, it's okay. And so even if you're in a place of equilibrium where you're doing whatever work you're able to do, where you're doing whatever peace you're able to do, you're doing whatever exercise, you're eating as well as you can, there's this overhanging anxiety out there that's the truth of the pandemic. And unless you're able to not feel that, which I think most, you know, humane people are not able to do, you're going to be feeling that. And so it's okay not to be thinking about that all the time if you're not directly faced with it. It's okay to take breaks with it. And it's okay, even if you're aware of it, to calm your anxiety. And one way to do that, there are lots of ways to do that, obviously. Anything you can do for stress reduction, whether it's getting outside or doing yoga or meditation or talking with a friend or screaming out loud or dancing really hard or taking some healthful substances. CBD is one of them. CBD can be helpful for that. There are other substances that can help you that don't have some of the issues that CBD is. One of my concerns about CBD, of course, is that it's expensive. The higher the dose you get, the more it costs. So it can be prohibitive for some people. And I think that things like theanine and GABA and pharmaGABA and lovely little herbs like lemon balm. So getting back to CBD and inflammation, as we said, that the coronavirus can activate interleukin-6, which is a cytokine that can cause increased inflammation, and CBD can calm it. CBD can be useful to help with the anxiety. Any anxiety you have going on because of the pandemic, CBD is one of the substances that can help to calm it, as can theanine, as can GABA, as can nervine herbs like lemon balm. Lemon balm is also very nice because it does have antiviral activity. So, and it's very benign. It's in the mint family. Things in the mint family tend to be benign. But lemon balm doesn't really taste like mint. It tastes like lemons. It's very lovely. And if you try lemon balm tincture or glycerite or tea, it's very palatable as long as you like lemons. If you don't like lemons, you won't care for it. But it's a very benign lemon taste, and It's really nice herb. And I keep forgetting to haul it out. I think I have some glycerite sitting around. All right. So there are those who successfully use CBD and THC to control mild anxiety. And there are people who use CBD and THC to help with post-traumatic stress disorder. One of the unfortunate things about a pandemic is that we are undergoing a global crisis. We're undergoing a collective global stress and trauma even. And so people are going to come out of this. That people who already have post-traumatic stress disorder may be feeling this a little bit stronger. People with anxiety and depression may be feeling this stronger too. And people are going to acquire PTSD because of this pandemic. That's something that we need to watch out for. And there are people who are, you know, going to be struggling with their mental health right now. And if that's you, I reach out to you. My heart goes out to you. If you are having a more difficult time mental, emotionally right now, that is completely normal. It's normal and it's to be expected. If you are a loving, feeling person, it's going to hurt more being in the time of this pandemic. So in terms of CBD and THC, these are things that can be helpful and we want to celebrate them a bit. If you do have a card in the state of Connecticut, I just want to caution you that if you're using cannabis with THC in it, it is illegal unless you have a card, unless you've been to a practitioner who has assigned you a medicinal marijuana card. And then once you have the medicinal marijuana card, you can go to a dispensary in the state of Connecticut. A big shout out to Ginger, who I see is listening. And Ginger is up in Massachusetts. Massachusetts has, you can use cannabis for personal use. So if you are in Massachusetts and using it in Massachusetts, and you don't have a card, that's fine. It's not a good idea to drive to Massachusetts and drive cannabis with THC in it back into Connecticut, because if you get caught, it is illegal. So I am not saying this because I think nobody should use cannabis. I'm saying it because I don't want anybody to get arrested and I don't want to be seen as recommending that you do something illegal. Don't do illegal things. That's not a good thing. You don't need to have committed a crime in addition to all the stressors of the pandemic. So if you're going to use cannabis products, use them safely and legally. In the state of Connecticut, of course, we can get CBD over the counter. And CBD products do not have THC, or they have negligible THC in them, I should say. And as I said, CBD has been shown to have activity against some of the cytokines and interleukins that coronavirus can stimulate. So it can be something that's helpful. It's not helpful for everybody, and it may be helpful for you. So it's something you may want to try if you feel like you need to ingest something to help you feel calmer. All right. So let's talk about some other things. Hey, because I'm on Facebook Live, I can do mask show and tell.
Oh, mask show and tell.
So I'm so happy that Ginger is listening, because I'm going to show the masks that she made me. So here is one of the masks that Ginger made me. I love it. It's so beautiful. I love the colors. Isn't it great? There's a little nose piece in it that straps around my nose. I do find that for me, just having ear loops, that maybe the shape of my head, or it may be that I'm a very active talker, I find that I do need, yes, pardon me. Okay, I'm a very active talker, so
nice elbow.
I found that I needed to have a tie around the back of my head. So if somebody graciously has made you a mask and it only has ear loops and you find that it falls off your nose, I found this lovely shoe. This is just a long shoelace. You can use a shoelace, you can use a lanyard, you can use a ribbon, you can use any kind of gaily colored thing. You can braid something or macrame something if you like. And then I find that I put this around the back of my head. This goes around the back of my head. And so like this, you can't see if you're just listening to me, but I pull the straps and then I tie it above my head and then it stays on better. And so I can continue to wear these beautiful masks that my friends have made me. The other thing is I can get more shoelaces and I can get different color shoelaces, and then I can change those up for fashion statement. And because I have a couple of colors and patterns, I can wash them. You know, I can wash them, like I can at the end of the day, if I'm not doing a laundry, I can hand wash this. And I can hand wash them, and I can use this, I can use this another ribbon, another colored ribbon. So this is another one that Ginger made me. This is one's beautiful. She made a bunch for our office, and I'm so grateful to her. Again, with the nose piece right here and the tie. And then my sister-in-law, Kathy, excuse me. So my sister-in-law, Kathy, also made me one. This one's really beautiful. Check it out. It has a nose piece right here. It's made from a sarong, a Hawaiian sarong. It's so pretty. And it has a backing, which is bright pink. It's very Fran. And then she also only had ear loops. So here's the shoelace. And then my friend Beth made me a couple, which is so great. So, I'm going to go out in the world a lot. I need to wash these. So I'm grateful to have a number of them. Then my friend Beth made me some with ties. And here's this one with this very cheery print. Check out this cheery print. It's got little hearts and sunflowers on gingham. It's lovely. And then it has actual ties attached to it. And then I have another one. So here's sunflowers. So this is not just, oh, I think sunflowers are pretty. Sunflower seeds are very good for you. Sunflower seeds have essential fatty acids in them. They have some omega-6 fatty acids in them, which are good for your mood, and they're also anti-inflammatory. Sunflower seeds are going to have some good minerals in it, including zinc, which is a wonderful immune tonic mineral. And then there's hearts on here, and I'm very concerned about cardiovascular health. So there's hearts, and also I want to spread love through the universe. So, and then the gingham is just cheery. And then I have another gingham one, and this one has strawberries on it. So strawberries will be in season soon. They are in season in Florida, and strawberries are a great thing to eat during the time of the coronavirus because they are high in vitamin C. And vitamin C is something that's thought to support the immune system and help to protect you in the time of the coronavirus. So I thought I'd do a little mask show and tell. And now as of 8:00 tonight in the state of Connecticut, we're going to be required to wear masks anywhere in public where it is difficult to social distance. So if you go into a store, if you go into the grocery store or the hardware store, any public spaces where it can be difficult to social distance, you're going to be required to wear a mask. So I'm very grateful to have a number of them so that I can wear one for one day. I can wash it. I can hand wash it and then pick up another one the next day if the one I just got, one I wore yesterday, is still drying. And then, of course, at some point during the week, I'm going to throw them all in the laundry.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So you have all these masks, and we know that cloth masks work. You know,
hi, Autumn.
They're supposed to work anyway. That's what we see. That's what we hear. Obviously, if you, let's say you walk into a store.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say you go to the local grocery store and you have your mask on and you walk around and you're feeling.
Hi, like, Billy.
Like it may in some way be, you know, that you've been exposed in some way or whatever. What do you do with the mask? Do you take it off when you leave and then launder it?
So what do you mean by exposed?
I mean, maybe you're concerned that you've been around other people that might have the virus. And so you put your mask on, which is good because you're protecting yourself. But the question is the mask now contaminated?
Because you've gone into a store where you feel like you have a higher likelihood of contamination.
Correct.
Well, this is why you want to have a couple of masks.
Right.
So I would say that leave the mask on, presumably you haven't gone that far from home because we're supposed to be hanging close to home. We're not supposed to be doing any essential travel.
Correct.
So hopefully if you live in Mansfield, you went to Big Y or Stop and Shop and you didn't go that far, I would leave the mask on. I would not take it off once you leave the store. Leave it on. Then when you get home, you take it right off. And you launder it. If you're doing laundry, you can actually launder it. And if you're not doing laundry, then just use some good soap. You need to come home. You should be washing your hands as soon as you get into the house. So you can go when you're washing your hands, when you first enter the house, wash your mask too at the same time.
Okay.
And you might want to use,
And what's the proper way to wash it?
Well, the thing is, we want to make it, remember, we don't want perfect to be the enemy of good. So, and the reality is people are not going to be washing these. Some people might be washing them obsessively. I don't know. But not everybody's going to wash these obsessively. Really, every time you do laundry, you should wash your masks. That's a good idea to do. And that way you're going to get a really good clean on the masks. But in the meantime, if you're cycling through these things and you're not going to do laundry every day. So I would have some laundry soap next to the sink where you're going to wash your hands when you come in from the house. And I would use the laundry soap. I would use regular soap on your hands, but use laundry soap on the mask. If you don't want to get laundry soap on your hands, then maybe wear gloves. So you don't get the laundry soap on your hands and launder the masks. It's probably okay to use hand soap on the mask. You probably want to use a stronger hand soap than, and you don't want to use one with moisturizer in it because you want something that's a detergent to get on the fabric because the viruses have if you can see me on Facebook Live, I'm waving a mask. because the viruses have a fatty layer. And the fat, and so detergents and soaps can get into the fatty layer. So probably any good soap is going to work, but I would not use a soap with moisturizer in it. Because if you're using hand soap, you might be using a soap with moisturizer in it, which is probably not a big deal as long as the soap is foamy. You want the soap to be a foaming soap because it's that foaming action that's going to break up the any viruses that are on your hands. So these are very fine points. And, you know, part of why you're wearing the mask is not so much to prevent you from contracting the virus from someone else. It's to prevent you from coughing or sneezing on someone else. So that part is probably not as critical. However, washing the masks frequently is a good idea. You know, we are allowed to wear cloth masks. We're saving the N95 masks and the really heavy duty masks for people who are in the healthcare industry. So, I have an itchy nose. And so here's what I've been doing when I have an itchy nose. I have been wiping my nose with my sleeve, not my hand. Yeah.
Sort of like sneezing. Coughing into your elbow.
Yeah. Because yeah. I'm not going to be able to sit here with an itchy nose forever. So, just a thought. Okay. All right. And so here's another thing. Now, again, if you are somebody who is in the front lines and who are, or who's dealing with a loved one who is sick or you yourself are sick, my heart goes out to you. And I am aware when I'm talking about how to deal with the pandemic, I just have this nagging feeling all the time about, you know, when we're talking about how to take care of bored kids and how to, how to make sure we don't gain weight and whether or not our sourdough starter is any good. that's an indicator of our privilege. It really is. And there are people who are really in a hard place. So I have to preface that. I remember when I was, when 9/11 happened, 9/11 happened in 2001. And in 2002, I started seeing a young man who was somebody I knew from college, and he lived in the Bronx. So shout out, Gary, if you're listening. Anyway, so he lived in the Bronx, and I still lived in Connecticut. He had not moved to Connecticut yet, so we were in a long-distance relationship. So the way we were handling is we were visiting each other on alternate weekends. On alternate weekends, he would visit me in New Jersey, and on alternate weekends, I would visit him in New York. And so he lived in the Bronx, but, you know, it was an opportunity to travel into Manhattan and enjoy New York City. So I said, I hadn't been to New York City since 9/11 happened. So I said, by right, I really feel like before I can just enjoy New York City, I need to go to the 9/11 memorial and honor the people who perished or were hurt or who were medically hurt by 9/11. So before I would do anything in New York City, I went there and, you know, I prayed and hung out at the wall and looked at all of the memorials at the wall. And there at that time, there was no, you know, towering memorial. There was a crater. And so it was still, you know, it was still an active site where they were, they were doing work on it. And there's a big fence around it. And there were a lot of personal memorials on it, personal mementos. I didn't feel like I could enjoy the city without doing that. Likewise, when we went to, we went for your birthday to see.
Oh, we went to Boston.
Yes, we went to Boston right after the Boston Marathon bombing.
Right.
And I said we should really go to the memorial site before it was either before or after we went and saw the show. So we did that. You know, that it's important to, if you are in a place of privilege or your place of fortune where you're not directly experiencing a calamity, it's still a good idea to give them energy, do what you can to help. And, you know, and because, you know, in Judaism, we believe that when something happens to a Jew, it happens to our entire community. And I say that this global pandemic, regardless of where you are in it, it's happening to all of us. It is a collective event. It's a collective trauma. It is happening to every single one of us. Some of us are privileged to be safe, and others of us are unfortunate to be suffering. And I think we're all suffering at least a little bit. And so I want to put voice to that. So anyway, what I'm about to talk about is something that, you know, is something that those of us who are privileged to think about it, we can think about. So what I'm going to talk about is weight gain during the pandemic, which for some of you, it's an issue. So, people are joking about COVID-15. You know, you've heard of when you go to college, there's the freshman 15. Well, this is the COVID-15. So there, you know, a lot of people are talking about how they're gaining weight, and I have a little article here that I'm going to pull up. But of course, that's one of those things that, once again, I'm encouraging people to be gentle with themselves. I don't want you to feel like, oh my goodness, if you're not doing a good job, or if you feel like you're eating too much stuff or eating too many things that maybe aren't good for you, and you know that you're gaining weight, don't worry about it too much. This is a time, as I said, if you get to the other side of this and you're healthy, then that's a wonderful thing. So I have some notes here on my phone. So if you're watching Facebook Live, you can see that I'm holding my phone. So anyway, this is a nice article from the Chicago Tribune, and it's talking about how, if you're reading this at 11 a.m. and you've already maxed your recommended calories for the day, we feel you. When you're staying home and local governments, are telling you that you have to stay at home, you know, it can be really hard to stay out of the refrigerator. And they make it very clear. They call them the privileged employees who can work from home. Those not working, for those still heading out the door for work, your routines have been shredded. Schools, gyms, and restaurants are closed. Hospitals and nursing homes forbid visitors. Vacations have been postponed. Weddings and funerals are on hold. It's a very stressful time. We are spending more time out indoors, and the microwave is getting a serious workout. So that is just what is going on right now. So that's definitely what's happening. So we're just eating a lot of comfort foods, you know, whether your thing is ice cream or peanut butter or pizza. We're walking by the kitchen or the coffee table, you know, grabbing snacks and treats. You know, we're eating in bed. We're trying to cook healthier. And even if we are cooking something healthy, you may be eating too much of it. So you're doing. And then the other thing that we're being told is support your local business. So, of course, restaurants are suffering right now. Some restaurants are absolutely closed. Other restaurants are open, but they're open for takeout. So we're being encouraged, we're being told and advertised to, hey, you can come get pizza. You can come get, you know, whatever takeout you want. It's available to you right now, and you feel like you're doing a community service by, pardon me, by by ordering takeout. And Ron and I ordered takeout on at the end of Passover. What a lot of Jews do is we haven't been able to eat bread for 8 days. Not that I eat bread a huge amount, but we haven't been able to eat bread at all for 8 days. So classically, a lot of Jewish people will go get pizza. And my sister did it. She went to a nice pizza restaurant in New Jersey, and we got something at one of our local pizza eateries. And so we're being encouraged to get a lot of takeout. So the advice there is to use common sense. Try to eat on your normal school schedule. Move your workstation around the house so you don't get bored. Not everybody's gaining weight. Some of you are going, hey, I'm eating okay. In fact, I'm on a diet. Good for you. Not everybody is doing that. Some people are sticking with their New Year's plans. And if you're not one of the people that is, that's sticking with your New Year's plans, your New Year's resolutions, it's okay. Don't feel like you're failing. You're not failing. You are doing your best to cope with what I said was a global collective trauma. All right. And however you get through it to the other side, if you get to the other side, you're doing great. And so once the imminent danger is past, we're going to have to do a lot of healing work. Well, some people are going to probably want to find ways to be more systematic about their diets. So I don't want to discourage people. So one of the things I'm trying to tell people is try to be mindful about how you're eating. Even if you're not entirely eating a healthy diet, one thing to think about is don't say to yourself, okay, I'm going to stop eating sugar, or I'm going to stop eating bread, or I'm going to stop eating chips, or whatever your go-to food is. I'm going to stop eating ice cream, whatever your go-to, comfort food is. Rather than saying that, maybe the thing to say is, I'm going to eat more vegetables. I'm going to eat more fruit. I'm going to eat more whole foods. I'm going to eat more healthy protein. Don't worry about what you shouldn't be eating, and do concern yourself with what you are eating. That's a really good idea to do. Instead of feeling like you're failing because you're eating too much pasta or pastry or whatever your thing is, make an effort to make a big salad. Make an effort to have some clean protein with that salad. Make an effort to make a nice stir fry. And then don't worry about whether you're eating chicken. You might find that if you fill up on healthy food, you might be a little less inclined to reach for something, to reach for a sweet treat. And make sure that when you're hungry, you do eat. And even if you're like, okay, that muffin is really calling me, well, before you eat the muffin, think about having a little bit of yogurt, having a little bit of protein, have some turkey breast, have some fruit, and have some of that first, and then see how much of that muffin you want. And in fact, if you start off a meal by eating high fiber, eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, eating protein, eating healthy fats, and then you finish it by eating the higher sugar or starchy food, that activity blunts your insulin. It blunts your insulin response. So your insulin doesn't rise high enough. And so you're less likely to have the sugar taken out of your blood very quickly, and therefore making you hungrier, making you want to eat. So you're going to do a little bit better with your health if you save your starchy and sugary foods for last. And if you make an effort to get some healthy food in the house, and eat the healthy food first, you might be a little less inclined. So just one of the best things to do is to be mindful, is when you're about to eat something, take a breath and stop and think about what you're eating and ask yourself if you really want to eat it, or are you just eating because you're bored? And you know what? If you're eating because you're bored, it's okay. If you're eating because you're stressed, because you're upset, some amount of that is going to be okay. It just has to be, because this is a really hard time. And, you know, the other thing is if you're trying not to go to the supermarket, but every 2 or 3 weeks, you may have stocks of things and you may not have as much fresh food. So you're trying to eat what stocks of things you have in the house. And that's a reasonable thing to do because, again, on the other side of this pandemic, you're going to be able to get outside more. You're going to be able to be more physically active and you'll get through this. Now, this is not accounting for people who are actually have eating disorders. And that's another category. If you have an eating disorder already and you're going into the pandemic with an eating disorder, anything that's a psychiatric problem, anything that's an addiction problem, anything like that is potentially going to be exacerbated at this time. So be kind to yourself. If you do have an eating disorder, whatever it is, whether it's bulimia or binge eating disorder or anorexia, and you find that it's being aggravated at this time, this is a good time to reach out to your support people. Reach out to any kind of counselor. There are counselors that are going to be available through telehealth. There's all kinds of health stuff that's available through telehealth. But doing group counseling is a good idea if you can do it through telehealth. There's group counseling. There's one-on-one. And there may be ways to do it in a cost-effective way. So don't be afraid to reach out for that if you're actually having a problem with your, like you have an eating disorder. So a little bit more about overweight, and that's that 42%, the latest study is that 42% of Americans are obese. There's a government study that showed that 4 in 10 American adults are obese, which means that they have a BMI of 30 or over. So BMI is a number that's not super useful. It's a little bit useful, but it's not super useful. BMI is body mass index, and it's a function of your height versus your weight. And it doesn't take into account body composition. So it isn't always useful. You can be a very big muscular person and have low body fat percent, a very healthy body fat percent, and be considered to be overweight or obese. So it's not entirely useful. Having said that, 4 in 10 American adults are obese, which means that they have a body mass index of 30 or over, and most of those people don't have an optimal muscle mass. It is very easy to be overweight or obese in this country because we are inundated with not so healthy food. When you go through the grocery aisle, when you go through the checkout at any of the grocery stores or even at hardware stores, or even when you go to buy gas, the gas station is attached to a convenience store. There's all kinds of unhealthy foods, or, you know, play foods, or,
comfort foods.
Yeah, comforting foods of some kinds, you know, just snacky things and things that are high in starch and sugar and fat that are available at a lot of these places. And it can be very tempting to go ahead and grab them. So, and the thing is, if you have a hard time not eating food when it's around, guess what disorder you have? It's called nothing. Right. Because we are wired to eat when food is available. We're wired for famine. We are not wired for the abundance of very reinforcing foods. Reinforcing foods that are everywhere are created so that you're going to want to eat them. You know, that food companies create foods that have a bliss point, so that you just want to keep on eating them and eating them. And then once you finish them, you have to go buy more. And that's how they make money. So when you eat produce doesn't have the same kind of a bliss point because they're full of fiber and they're full of water and they fill you up a lot quicker. So when you eat produce, you're not going to get as full. And, you know, you're probably not going to buy a container of grapes and eat the whole container of grapes in a sitting. But you very well could eat an entire bag of potato chips with 5 times the calories in a sitting. That's easy to do because, you know, things that are high in starch and fat or starch and sugar, either starch and fat or sugar and fat, they turn off your satiety signals in your brain. So you have a peptide called neuropeptide Y in your brain that gets flipped on when you eat those combinations, the combination of fat and starch or fat and sugar. And neuropeptide Y makes it so that you don't feel your satiety. So you just keep eating. That's why you can eat five pieces of pizza and not even feel it, or, you know, eat the entire tub of ice cream. Ice cream is very easy to eat. It's very reinforcing, and it's full of fat and sugar. And so it turns off your satiety signal, so it's very easy to eat too much of it. And we're wired to do that because in nature, if we know we were, when we were hunter-gatherers, food was scarce and it was hard to find. So again, the fact that you're obese, it's not, it's partially environmental. If it was simply genetic, very few people would be obese. Or actually, most people's genetic wiring is so that they will gain weight in the presence of lots of food. It is rare for a person to be genetically wired to be thin. If that were true, most people would be thin. But no, what you see is most people are overweight or obese. Now, mind you, 4 in 10 American adults are obese, or that's 42%. I remember when I was studying this in 2002, the number was more like 35. So the obesity rate has gone up. Yes. And so this study, this 42% number, came from a study by the CDC that was done in 2017 to 2018. And that from 2015 to 16, it was only 40%. And I remember in 2002, it was something like 35%. So the obesity rate is going up. The difference between 40 and 42% isn't statistically significant. It's just a trend. But it is a trend, and it's because it's not statistically significant, it is possible that overall the rates didn't really arise. But like half a century ago, so we're talking about 1970, right? Because 1970 is 50 years ago. There only about 1 in 100 adults were severely obese. Now it's 10 times more common. Ugh. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's risen a lot. So the findings suggest that more Americans will get diabetes, heart disease, and cancer, and it'll be more and more difficult for doctors to care for so many obese people, that even your average primary care doctor might have as many as 100 obese patients. So the
obesity, we could also say, is compromising your immune system, correct?
Sure. Yes, unfortunately.
Right now.
Yeah. Mm. Again, how much do you want to, like, I don't want to make people crazy right now, all right? Okay. If you're obese and listening to this, say, oh my goodness, I do have, that means I have increased inflammation because of my weight. Yeah, you do. So do, again, that the advice for you is no different. You can't do any better than your best, and don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Those are my mottos right now. Don't feel like you have to make major life changes right now, because trying to make major life changes in the face of a pandemic that is basically forcing us all to confront some level of fear and anxiety all the time, you can't expect that you're going to do something about this. So yes, if you are overweight or obese, you're going to have more inflammatory compounds in your body. So what do you do about that? So as I said, do your best to eat more produce, eat more healthy fruits and vegetables, eat more clean protein, eat nuts and seeds if you're not allergic to them. And be mindful when you eat, before you go to eat, think about, are you about to, are you really hungry? Do you really want to be eating this food right now? And is there something else you can do? Is there something else that would be reinforcing that you might enjoy doing? And that's okay to do. Not to get addicted to video games, sometimes what I will do if I'm like thinking, I want another piece of chocolate, I will play a video game on my phone, you know, and I have silly favorite games. I mean, I'm not the one to play the games where you have the shoot 'em up kind of games or the role playing games. I mean, I'm a real fan of, I have three that I like to play right now. I'm into the Candy Crush. I have always loved Cookie Jam Blast. Candy Crush and Cookie Jam Blast, those are both the kinds of games where you're matching at least three pretty colored shapes and things blow up, and you know, it's all candy based. One's candy based, one's cookie. It's so cute. And the third one I'm playing is a word game. Wordscapes I'm playing. And I really like the Wordscapes because it's like, you know, sort of like doing a crossword.
Well, it's like Yeah, it's a puzzle.
Yeah, basically. And that's a fun thing. So those are my three go-tos, and I'll play those. And, you know, it's not a wonderful thing to be constantly into your video game, but I don't think it's a bad thing to be into the video game sometime. And if it prevents you from eating, something that maybe you shouldn't be eating, that's not a bad thing. You know, one of the reasons we eat is because in the immediate sense, it makes us feel better. When you eat something that's reinforcing and that you enjoy, it does increase your pleasure-seeking neurotransmitters. So you're going to have increased dopamine and you're going to have increased serotonin. Dopamine makes you happy and light, makes your brain light up, and serotonin calms you down. So those you're going to be pleasure-seeking right now, especially if you're not feeling so pleasured. So food can do that for you. And the pretty colors and the fun lights and the rewards and the video games also light your brain up. When you win a video game or you connect three or you connect a whole bunch or you advance a level on your video game, it makes you happy. And you might find that it makes you, that maybe instead of reaching for that piece of chocolate, play another level on your video game. You know, they have so many cute video games that you can play on your phone that are not necessarily, you know, they're not violent or anything. They're just match games. And those are, to some extent, they're good for your brain if you play them for a while. Finding a distraction. Not only are you finding a distraction, you're finding another way to achieve the same effect. What you're looking for is the brain reward. You're looking for the increase in those hormones, in the neurotransmitters. You're looking for an increase in dopamine and increase in serotonin that's going to make you both happy and calmer. And that way you do that without making yourself gain weight. So that's a nice thing.
There you go.
Yeah. So, So obesity is on the rise. And if you're working on obesity right now, don't work too hard on it. It's okay. I said so. Get a level of exercise that works for you. Eat in a way that works for you, in a way that makes you feel healthy. And do your best. Like I said, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And don't be too hard on yourself. Did you know that in the workplace, being overweight in the workplace is an advantage for men, but not for women? A bigger man is going to be more likely to be taken seriously in the workplace. So there's a study at Cornell that found that overweight men in the workplace are perceived as more persuasive than thinner men, and that researchers at Cornell's Dyson School of Applied Economics also found that overweight women do not get the same advantage. So bigger men get taken more seriously than smaller men.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You got anything to say about that?
Bigger men. Wait. What about bigger men versus smaller men?
That's what I'm saying. That if you are overweight, if you're in a workplace situation, a larger man, even if the larger man is overweight, is going to get taken more seriously at work than a thinner man or a smaller man. Yes.
Is there like any depth to that?
Well, there's a reason. I mean, we can speculate, but let's see what they say. The stigma that's commonly associated with being overweight, the anthropological concept of being a big man, literally carries meaning that if you're actually bigger, you get taken a little bit more seriously, and you get thought that you can be more of a leader. It's based on studies of pre-industrial societies where weight embodied status. And finding
would be successful if you had extra weight because you were able to eat a lot.
Moderately big men are seen as more persuasive, even in environments where there's no reason to interpret overconsumption of food as a signal of wealth. And there were six studies that show this, that determined that weight among men is positively associated with perceived persuasiveness, much like how height is often associated with perceived strong leadership. So, they found that descriptions like heavyweight, gravitas, not being a pushover were considered positive and a sign of leadership traits like persuasiveness. Respondents agreed that people with gravitas were more likely to be overweight but not obese. So if you're obese, they take you a little bit less seriously. So you have to be overweight but not too overweight, apparently. Right. So.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
All right. So, So the overall study that when you Cornell did a study where they asked people to rate drawings of heavy women and men to determine how persuasive, extroverted, humorous, and physically attractive each person would be in real life. And overweight and obese males were seen as persuasive, but persuasiveness declined for females with larger bodies. But when they dialed back on gender, they found that larger men and women were not judged to be equally persuasive. Respondents were asked to rate drawings of men and women on various body sizes on how persuasive they expected the person to be. And overweight and obese males were seen as more persuasive, but perceived persuasiveness declined linearly for females drawn as overweight or obese. Okay. So there's a sexist factor. Women who are overweight and obese in our culture are not seen as persuasive or attractive. That's amazing. Yeah, that opposite impacts in the workplace, which is really, really unfortunate.
Pretty sad.
And overweight women are also less likely to get hired. Yeah, so 42% of HR professionals disqualified one obese female in a group of six hypothetical job applicants. Only 19% disqualified one obese male candidate.
Wow.
Yeah, so people are prejudiced against people who are overweight, and people are more prejudiced against overweight women.
Sounds like the HR people need to go back to school.
Yeah, something. Mm. I know. Well, it's a really harsh reality, and it's not right, and it's not fair, because everybody, as we know, 42% of Americans are obese, and it's distributed pretty equally among men and women. So, and yet, men, big men, are still seem to be as more powerful and effective as big women, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, there's no reason to think that. Yep. So, so if you are listening to this, check your attitudes towards people of various sizes. What are you doing about that? Are you viewing people differently based on their size? Are you prejudiced against them? Do you think they're less deserving of love? Are they less deserving of attention? Are they less deserving of being taken seriously? If you have some issues around that, that would be something to examine, because I'm telling you right now, people have a difficult time in this country being at a normal weight, because most people, the vast majority of people in this country, over 70%, are overweight. So if you're being prejudiced against somebody who's overweight, you're being prejudiced against most people in this country. So, and this country is filled with and run by all the people in it. So to say that we have a status, high status level of less than 30% of the people in this country because they're smaller, they're less overweight, that's not right. And especially women are still at a disadvantage in terms of status. So, anyway. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.